Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, American security sources have warned that Iran is planning an imminent attack on Israel. That Iranian threat follows a strike 10 days ago on the Iranian consulate in Syria, which killed 13 people, including senior Iranian military leaders. Washington now believes a significant and direct attack on Israel is coming within days. And despite US President Joe Biden's concerns about Israel's actions in Gaza, he says that American support for Israel in the face of Iran is ironclad. Well, I'm joined on the line now by the Director of International Security Program at Chatham House, Dr. Patricia Lewis, and Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD, Scott Lucas. And Scott, I'm going to start with you, because this so-called ironclad response is to be expected from the United States as Israel's closest ally. But do you think it will further embolden the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in his military assault on Gaza?
I think at this point, Claire, we're still talking about two separate, if linked, issues. I think there's absolutely no question that the United States is going to step aside from Israel if Iran threatens retaliation over the killing of its commanders inside Syria by Israel, well, for the past 4 months. The Iranians a few days ago lied, saying that the Americans had sent them a message that, don't attack our personnel. But, you know, as far as Israeli personnel, OK, that's fine. And the Americans immediately knocked that back. I think you still have the core issue of what is happening inside Gaza, in which you have an open-ended war. You have an open-ended assault, which is killing, you know, more than 33,000 people, the large majority of whom are civilians. And I think the Americans, they drew, it wasn't a red line last week. It was misinterpreted as a red line. They did say to the Israelis, stop killing aid workers after the assassination, the killing of seven staff of World Central Kitchen. They did say, look, get at least a little bit more aid into Gaza so things don't look so bad. But to be honest with you, Claire, that wasn't trying to get Israel to end the military operations. It was to buy some time. It was to buy some time for the talks in Egypt, hoping, I think against hope, that somehow you can end this open-ended war, which I don't think will happen as long as Netanyahu's in power in Israel and Hamas are in power in Gaza.
So, Patricia, can you take that statement from Joe Biden overnight, this ironclad promise to back Israel if there is any sort of retaliation from Iran? How do you put that into the context of their conversations around what's been happening in Gaza?
So I think one of the big concerns right from the beginning, since October the 7th and the terrible atrocities enacted by Hamas against Israel, has been that the reaction from Israel has been, essentially Israel has walked into a trap. And the trap has been set, and it walked into Gaza, and it's done all the things that we've just heard about and that we're also concerned about. And the other front, if you like, was the escalation of this. And the US and European countries have done so much to try to reduce the risk of escalation to an all-out Middle East war. And this front against Iran, which has been brewing for years and years and years, and you know that Netanyahu has been wanting to attack Iran and has made those threats over a number of times over the issue of nuclear weapons and the possibility that Iran might be developing them. What we're seeing here now is that other front. And this will cleave the Middle East because you have, of course, all the Gulf states that are no friends of Iran, but also really not good friends of Israel. And, of course, because of Israel's actions now in Gaza, that makes the Middle East countries much more likely to side against Israel because, you know, their populations will not enjoy any realpolitik in that sense. So we're in a terrible situation. So I think what the United States is trying to do, and it's hard to know that this will work, but is to say, if you do that, if you retaliate from Iranian soil into Israeli soil, a direct hit, and then Israel responds, we will have Israel's back. So know this, that this won't just be a one-off. You have to understand the full range of consequences that might happen if you do this. Mm-hmm. And they're hoping, I think, to deter that. Iran from doing it.
I see.
I don't know if it will work, to be honest.
There's some analysis in The Guardian of this morning, and they say that the response to this will very much depend on what happens when Iran decides to take this action. So if there is an assault on an Israeli embassy, or if there is a missile that is intercepted, it might be possible to prevent escalation. However, if there is multiple casualties caused within Israel, that's a very different story. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Very different story. And I think that, you know, that Iran has been baiting Israel for a long time, which is why you saw the attack in Damascus on the consulate building. And I think that we've got a situation where things can, you know, we think things are bad now, they can get worse, a lot worse. And this is, everybody, you know, working in this field has seen this from last year and before that, of course. But without those terrible attacks, everyone could see how this could escalate in that way. And now it looks like we're at that tipping point now. And I think everyone has to do everything they can to prevent that. And you're quite right. A lot will depend on what happens, what the response will be, and whether or not Iran's hand can be stayed at this point.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Scott, Joe Biden is also playing to his domestic audience, and we know that his failure to rein Benjamin Netanyahu in has cost him support amongst key groups, Muslim voters, younger voters, progressive voters. How do you think this, what some will see as a pivot over Iran, how is that going to play out for him domestically?
I don't think Iran is up at the top of Americans' agendas. I do think that the Democrats, if this Israeli open-ended war continues into the autumn, face losing some support amongst the voters you've identified. And I think that's a concern. But I think it's a concern primarily over the Israeli attacks rather than Iran. Let me follow up on Iran, because I've got a slightly different perspective that I think could always. I think there's a difference between Iranian rhetoric and Iranian actions right now. The Iranian rhetoric is very much chest thumping. You know, the Supreme Leader said yesterday, you know, Israel should be punished and must be punished. But if I had 5 cents for every time that the Iranians threatened retaliation over Israeli attacks for years, I'd be a really wealthy man. Right now, and I do emphasize this right now, the Iranian regime is actually being fairly restrained in terms of what it's doing. It is not really looking at direct military action against the Israelis, because it knows it would lose a direct conflict with Israel and the United States. It's not even really looking at escalating action through its allies and its proxies. Hezbollah does not want a war with Israel on the Israel-Lebanese front. And Iran is in a weakened position. It's in a weakened position in Syria and Iraq. I think Iran's play here will be more the diplomatic and the political route, which mm-hmm. is they'll play the victim. They will portray Israel as the aggressor. And as we just saw in the last 24 hours, the Supreme Leader made an appeal to Muslim countries, which said, come to our side. You now need to come off the fence and denounce Israel alongside us.
So why? What is the strategic benefit?
Can I just interrupt?
Yes, Patricia, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say in response to that, that may be true, but what's happened, and I hope you're right, what's happened, though, is that the U.S. has made public the intelligence that it's got. Now, in the past, when the U.S. has made public intelligence, it's usually because they're very, very sure and they want to escalate it up away from just diplomatic channels.
Well, that was my question, Patricia. I was wondering, what is the strategic benefit to the United States in coming out so strongly and warning about this imminent attack?
Yes, exactly. And so what we've seen, so for example, when the US warned Russia about the attacks at the theatre, the imminent attacks at the theatre, it was sort of sidelined. We've seen warnings from Egypt to Israel about the pre-October the 7th sidelined. When you make them public, they're less likely to be sidelined. They're less likely to be discounted. But you've also said, you've come out and you've said, we know this. We have intelligence. And we saw this happen just prior to February 2022 with the imminent attack from Russia to Ukraine. And a lot of people didn't believe it until it happened, but the US was saying it loud and clear. So when the US comes out with this sort of intelligence, it serves several purposes, but essentially what they're saying is we're very sure about this. So I think this is somewhat different to the normal rhetoric. I'm hoping you're right, though.
Mm-hmm. Scott, can you speak to that? You know, why would the Americans come out and say this publicly if they weren't taking it very seriously?
Well, I think there's a type of intelligence that Patricia refers to quite rightly, which is that, you know, there is the prospect of an imminent attack, which is exactly what the U.S. told the Russians before the Islamic State attack near Moscow just a few weeks ago. But there's also a type of releasing intelligence, which is effectively, you might be thinking of doing this. You might be planning this, and be aware we know what you're doing. So in other words, it's effectively preempting. It's drawing a line against any possible action rather than saying that the Iranians are on the point of it. I do think that the Iranians, for example, will try to, and they've done this in the past, they will carry out groups to abduct and assassinate personnel. They have used their allied militias in Iraq and in Syria to attack U.S. bases, American personnel on bases. But at the end of January, after the Americans retaliated against that, the Iranian military pulled back. They told those allied militias in Iraq and in Syria, you need to stop attacking because the retribution is too great. And significantly, the Houthi attacks in the Red Sea, which were damaging shipping, there was a bit of a curb put on that, interestingly, by China, who said, look, you've got to stop this because of the economic damage. In other words, the Iranians may want to retaliate. They may want to respond. But I think it's a huge risk for them. And I don't think they're in a strong position right now. Mm-hmm. I hope that's right, but I can't guarantee it's right, just like Patricia said. That's just my best estimate right now.
Patricia mentioned the attack in Moscow, and that showed us the limit of the relationship between Russia and Iran. But and I'll hear from you both on this, but Scott, maybe you first. Is Putin a wild card here if tensions were to escalate between Iran and Israel?
Again, I think if Russia was in a stronger position, then, you know, regarding, you know, its invasion of Ukraine, regarding its international position, I think Russia could be intervening to a greater extent in the Middle East. But right now, you know, Russia's caught in what is effectively that frozen conflict in eastern Ukraine, and they're getting punished by the Ukrainians behind the front lines. Earlier in this conflict, in the first few weeks after the war, Russia made a big diplomatic play saying it could broker some type of settlement, some type of peace. They've sort of backed away off of that now because they don't really have that many cards they can play at this point in the Middle East. And again, the problem of allying alongside Iran is you've got two countries who are largely isolated internationally. It's sort of an axis of the vulnerable. And I think the Russians will be a little bit careful here about their next step.
Patricia?
I agree with that. I mean, I think that the other card that was mentioned briefly is, of course, the role of China. And China does have influence over Iran. And I wonder if we've seen China step in on other occasions where things could get out of hand. And I wonder if China might just come in and try to do something to help and maybe offer Iran some incentives to reduce the likelihood of this attack. I see that the Israelis are saying that they're preparing for an attack from Iran, and that they, you know, they've actually mentioned the types of weapons that they think are being readied, etc. So it could be, and I'm sure this is the case, that all of this is in order to deter Iran from doing it. But of course, as we know, messaging can go horribly wrong. Things can escalate and get out of hand quite quickly.
Thank you both for joining us this morning. That's Dr. Patricia Lewis and Professor Scott Lucas.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.